broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for September 19th in the year of our Lord, 2019. And our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, it is indeed Constitution Week, and we are celebrating the supreme law of our land, which has provided more freedom to more people in the history of the world than any other case study in the world's history. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, and that's why we've got to return to the supreme law of our land. That's why we've got to have pure application of the principles that made America great in the first place, namely adherence to the supreme law of our land. And the further we get away from applying the pure principles that made it great, the worse it'll get. The more we embrace those principles, the better it'll get. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. All right, Kirk Crosby's with me. Welcome, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
You're very welcome. We're talking about, and we talked about this last hour, a quick recap so people get caught up to speed, and then we'll continue on this discussion because I think it's really critical. A lot of points to make. Kurt found this incredible story. Five cities living on $50,000 a year. How far does the average entry-level salary go? And they say it depends on where you live. But the entry salary at $50,000 a year, and people are struggling. They say recent graduates in entry-level jobs will make an average of $51,347 annually. And anyway, they say here are their stories edited and condensed from the Wall Street Journal. That's where it all comes from. But $50,000 as the entry salary is just shocking. For decades and for several hundred years in America, look, people would make $2, $3, $4, $5 a week, 25 cents an hour, this kind of stuff. Okay? So Leslie from Houston, 25 years old, makes $45,000. She's a payroll and HR administrator. Okay? She pays $683 in rent. I don't think that's unreasonable, Kurt. It's expensive. She splits, I guess, with her fiance, so she's living with somebody she shouldn't be living with. But again, that's a moral dilemma for sure. How do you get to work? Can't really get to a lot of places without a car. Sometimes we use Uber, but there you go. Now, she says, I pay this. $375 a month for the car, not including insurance. My job's kind of far away, so I have to fill up the tank once a week. Now, you can say $375 is a lot for a car, and it is. But today, even used cars, the average used car is around $20,000 now. $32,000 is the average for like a new vehicle. And you could say, well, they shouldn't be buying those expensive cars. And maybe that's right. But you got to look at it and say it's very hard to get a reliable car under $10,000 now unless you know how to look. Most of the cars aren't very nice, or, you know, they're pretty old and you got a lot of maintenance costs, or you got to have a lot of experience or a friend in the car business to help you. I mean, it's tough for people. What's your typical Friday night or weekend like? We have a lot of bars near downtown, and she says, games you can play outside. So, you know, when you play those games, it decreases the cost. It's a place for them to hang out. Normally, if we decide to use Uber, if we're going out with friends, in other words, we're going to drink and we don't want to drive, is what she's saying. It's $13 to $25 to get there. We'll go to dinner. I might have one or two drinks. That's it. Altogether, we normally spend about $100. Well, $100 is kind of expensive, but then she says, we used to do that like twice a month. So $200 a month for entertainment isn't too bad. Now that we're getting married soon, though, we don't do this. It's too expensive. And then they say we're probably spending $35,000 on the wedding. Now, that is out of this stratosphere. But again, that's what people have been taught they should do. I've had weddings. My wedding cost probably $4,000 at the most. My children's weddings, you know, I've got three kids married and a fourth one about to be married. They've cost around $4,000 to $5,000 for every wedding. Some of them are a little more expensive than others, depending on. The most expensive ones have been when we have a bride and groom that have different locations where they live. And then sometimes if they get married at a destination for certain reasons, then, you know, two or three locations can add to the cost and stuff like that. But $35,000 is out of the question. I married four kids in my own wedding. And all together, they've been less than $25,000 for all five examples. And this is one wedding for $10,000 more than that. On this kind of salary, it'll never fly. Now, then they say, are you able to save? Nope. Everything I would save goes basically to the wedding right now. Well, no, duh. You'll never pay that off. You got to cut the wedding expenses is the biggest problem that I see with this one. The other problem that I see with this one is she's living with her fiance. She should wait and live with him, you know, once they're married. But again, that's a personal judgment call on my part. Nevertheless, you know, things are just too expensive, Kurt. Any other one to break down on this one?
Well, you know, you're exactly right, Sam. I mean, you know, that I'm glad you brought up that wedding thing. I mean, we just barely had a wedding of our youngest son. And, I mean, you know, our deal was the wedding dinner, and then we had to pay for some flowers. I mean, it was kind of crazy. At least my wife said, man, we would have never done that ourselves. But, you know, that was just one of those deals that came up there. But the wedding dinner, you know, we just, I mean, you just bought the food, made it, then you ate. I remember the bride's mom asked a question, well, who's catering the dinner? And we told him Crosby Catering, you know, that's...
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with catering a dinner if you're conservative. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, a lot of times people use a wedding place or a reception place or whatever. There's nothing wrong with some of those things as long as you're very careful with expenditures. So I don't know how much you guys spent. And I don't know how much the other side spent. You know, a lot of times the groom side spends a lot less.
Well, the flowers were like $600, and I think the food was like $400. So,
yeah, so $1,000.
The wedding
bucks.
Was about $1,000 for us.
But that's the men's side. I don't know what the ladies' side cost.
Yeah,
I'll be surprised if they did it for less than $3,000 on their side, though.
Yeah, but it wasn't $30,000.
Of course. And that's my whole point is that, you know, it can be anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 if you're careful, depending on what you're willing to do. For example, I'm going to Arizona.
And yet,
for
I wedding. Think you could still be happy for a lot less money.
No,
Sam. Don't you think?
No, you can't be happy unless you spend at least above the average expenditure in America. Of course you're right, Kurt. Of course you're exactly right. In fact, I almost submit to you, the more you spend at some point, the less happy you'll be.
I agree.
So you're absolutely right, and that's the whole point and why we bring this up. We're not, you know, trashing this girl, but we are highlighting, you know, what can be done, right? We need solutions, and I'm just telling you, if this girl doesn't spend $35,000 on the wedding, maybe they bring it down to $5,000 or $3,000 or whatever they can, then, you know, all I can tell you is it'll make a difference. Now, let me give you an example. I'm going to Arizona for my son's wedding, so I pay for the lunch, too, that you're talking about, and I'm not going to make the food. Because it's going to be right after Thanksgiving, so we're already making Thanksgiving dinner in a rented house, right? And so I can't make the food for this event, and I can't dump all that on the wife's side of things. So we are going to cater that one, for instance. We're going to be very careful with the catering. It's going to be held outside in the backyard, so there's no cost for the venue. We're going to be, you know, so, but again, I get every circumstance is different, right? I had one couple that they got married in one location. The husband's side was in one location, and the wife's side was in one location. That was three locations. That was probably the most expensive wedding we had, but it was still about $5,000 or less. So Kurt's point is wisely taken, that you can make the food yourselves. You can get neighbors and loved ones and people from your church to chime in and help out. You can do things so much more inexpensive. You can plan it yourself. You can have loved ones get involved. Anyway, I digress, but poor lady, everything I could save goes to the wedding. She'll never do well in that. All right, the next one's Tally Blockus. I got to do the first one, Kurt. Why don't you break down the second one? Indianapolis or what? Minneapolis? What? Oh, Minneapolis. Go ahead. These are interesting. And I think we can highlight ways to make a difference in the cost and expenditures people have, Kurt. I think they're deceived into believing that if you don't do it that way, you can't have happiness. And that's Kurt's point, and he's spot on.
Her name is Natalie, and she's in Minneapolis. She's 24 years old. She makes $47,500. You know, tells she's an her occupation is a resolution specialist at Ameriprise Financial. Her rent's $870 for a bedroom in a two bedroom apartment. So she gets one of the bedrooms. They say, "How do you get to work?" She says, typically I ride the bus because parking downtown is an average of $9 a day. So that adds up really fast. I have a Metro pass, through my job that I pay for out of my paycheck, and it's about $60 a month for unlimited rides. There's your government transportation. I do have a car, she says, and I try and pay my insurance semi-annually. Instead of doing it monthly, I pay around $450 twice a year. That way I can deplete my savings at once and not have to worry about it. What's your typical Friday night or weekend plans? She says, there's this bar called Cowboy Jack's downtown that we go to sometimes, or if we go to Uptown, Stella's Fish Cafe turns into a little bar scene at night. She says, we try and pregame at home as much as possible, so once we're out, we don't have to buy as many drinks. We'll all split an Uber to a bar, which ends up being $3 to $4 a person. It depends how rowdy we're being that specific night, but we probably spend 30-ish on average. Typically, I stick with a vodka lemonade. I'm not ordering Grey Goose or anything like that. They say, are you able to save? She says, I'm not in a relationship and I don't have any kids or pets, so I'm trying to keep my 401k contribution as high as possible. It's at 10%, so I'm seeing less of my salary than a lot of other people are. I also try to put $200 monthly into a savings account. Anyway, she goes on.
So 10% savings plus $200 in the savings account. I mean, she's trying to do well. And I'm not saying every choice these people make are perfect, but I'm just saying, look at this example, though. You're just struggling on $50K a year. Even an individual with no pets or no relationship isn't doing that well. Hang tight.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Yeah, we're talking about it. The power of love, baby. This is Liberty Roundtable Live. We're talking about these incredible stories about people who have entry salaries, according to the Wall Street Journal, of over $50,000 a year. Right around there, the average salary for a beginner is $50,000 nowadays coming out of college. And crazy stuff. Folks are struggling to pay off their student debts and more. Kurt was briefing you on Natalie's story. Kurt?
Very good, Sam. And, you know, she finishes up saying with her in the question where she's asked about, are you able to save? She says, being in the finance field, I do have a financial advisor who helps me coordinate what I should be doing. I also do save up for some fun girl trips, she says. I'm going to visit my friend who lives in North Carolina in October. My friend and I are splitting a checked bag so we can save on that.
Well, so people are doing the best they can. I don't think their choices are perfect, but in her case, I mean, doing pretty reasonable. Now, David of Oklahoma City has an interesting story. He's age 24. He makes $45,000. Occupation investment advisor. You'd think some of those guys would do pretty well. Rent, $362. He splits the rent with his fiance. Again, living together when they ought not, in my opinion. How do you get to work? Drive my car. For car insurance alone, we pay about $125 a month. I have a brand new vehicle, and she has an older vehicle. So, again, the vehicle's pretty expensive. Brand new vehicles are out of control, folks. What's your typical Friday night or weekend plans? I like to go to Top Golf. You can spend a lot of money there, easily over $100. But Top Golf, you can get dinner and drinks and hang out. And sometimes I go to the show cinema, bowling, and a $5 movie night on Tuesday. Anyway, we tend to cook in a lot and save money that way. In 4 years together, we've never been on a vacation. Every time we start to save up the money for it, we decide maybe we ought to not do it. What else could we use our money for that would not be gone in 3 days? In Oklahoma, we're big-time hunters, so we go ahead and hunt and get our meat that way. Are you able to save? I'm not on a fixed salary. Being an independent financial advisor, I had to plan for my own taxes. I also had to plan for my insurance. That's my license to do what I do in the financial world. See, expensive. I put 30 to 40% into a savings account. I'm a big time saver. I max out my Roth IRA as well. So that's $500 a month. So this guy's saving pretty good. But again, not a lot of money. I mean, these people are literally struggling to stay afloat. No vacation in how many years? And I know they would weigh it and say, well, we don't want to waste our money. You know, we don't want to lose it in 3 days of a vacation. But I personally believe building memories with people and vacations are necessary. Now, a vacation doesn't mean that it's got to cost a lot of money. It could be a staycation. What it means is you've got to take a break from your day-to-day routines and shake it up a little bit. It's refreshing for the soul. That doesn't mean it's got to be an expensive vacation now. Anyway, Patrick in North Carolina, Kurt.
Very good, Sam. Yeah, Patrick's commission, or his salary is $48,000. He makes commission above that. Occupation, utility sales representative and sealed air. He rents for $1,400 for a one-bedroom apartment. They say, how do you get to work? He lives 10 to 15 minutes away, and bad traffic might take him 30 minutes. You know, he says, it doesn't cost anything to park where I live. I go to Wake Forest University at Charlotte campus for my MBA. Not basketball, by the way. Well, whenever I go to class downtown, I'll normally just park at my apartment and walk. He says, they ask him about the Friday night or weekend. And he says, if we're going out on a Saturday afternoon, there are a lot of places to grab a beer. It's been locally brewed and eat at a food truck. I typically spend between $50 and $100. He's eating a lot, I think. Minor league baseball games are really fun times.
No, it's the multiple beers that cost a lot, buddy. Especially those specialty brewed beers. They're expensive.
Very good. Never paid for one and don't ever plan to. But anyway, he says the biggest thing for me when the question about savings, he says, is retirement. He's, what, 26? He says, I pay for school with student loans, but I put about 15% of my money into my 401k each month, mostly because the company will match about 5%. I try to put about $200 a week into a savings account for a rainy day more than anything else. I want to buy a new truck soon, he says. I'm driving the same truck I've had for 10 years, so I don't have a payment every month, and the insurance is cheap. I got really close to buying a condo in the spring, but I wanted to put 20% down, and at that point I had maybe 15. I have a real serious sit-down probably once every few months where I type out all of my expenses and use an Excel sheet to budget it out, but then you get a little distracted or life moves a little too quickly and you get off track.
So, you know, again, the guy's trying to save, the guy's putting money in a 401k, he's trying to plan it out, watch his expenses, driving the same truck, no car payment. I mean, I'm not saying these people are doing awful, but they're not doing that well either, Kurt, per se. Rebecca in Tucson, Arizona. 27 years old, $45,000, project specialist, University of Arizona Alumni Association, that's her job, rent $800 or, you know, payment $800 to live. How do you get to work? It's about a 10-minute drive. You got to pay $726 a year just to park on the government-approved campus there. I go to lunch, see my dog. Does Luna factor into your budget? Listen to this. Older dog. So I knew that I had to get pet insurance. What's your typical Friday night like? Love to eat out. That's where all my money goes. A more expensive drink, Kurt. Here it is. $8 to $10 for a drink. But, you know, you get five of those dudes and you're $40 in, $50 in, right? Are you able to save? It's super tight. I put money into my retirement and my employer's match. I try to save, but it's really hard. What's my savings account looks like? That's not a pretty sight, she says. I use my savings to pay for my master's degree. So I'm just trying to rebuild my savings right now. These examples, Kurt, I highlight because I want to talk about, they're not doing that well. I'm not saying they're doing horrible. You know, there's a mixture of, in my opinion, not so good decisions with some pretty good decisions by some of them. But I want to talk about the bigger picture. And let me tell you what I mean by the bigger picture. Every one of these people is anywhere from, what, 21 to 28 years old, 27 years old, something like that. They're all in their mid-20s for the most part. And none of them are married. None of them. And very few of them own any house of any kind. Very few of them have no car payments. I think one of them had no car payments or whatever. To park is expensive everywhere. Okay? And I look at this and I say, maybe they're not spending their money as perfectly as they could, but many of them are trying. They're getting a degree, thinking a master's degree is going to help them a lot. So another one's like, hey, I got to, you know, pay for retirement and I got to put this much money into my savings. And people are really, in many ways, trying. But I think societally, we're off on the wrong track in terms of what we prize. Let me say that again. We're off track, Kurt, on what we prize. Okay, do you prize going to the bar? Well, that's what these guys do every weekend, virtually every single one of them. Well, one didn't say bar. She just said she liked to go out to eat, and that's where all her money goes. Now, I don't have a problem with going out to eat on occasion. I get that it's expensive, but I also get that if you mix your entertainment with going out to eat and you spend time talking to people and doing productive things, that it may not be as bad as it sounds. You got to eat anyway, so that's where some of the cost goes. It's overpriced, but at least you get an entertainment or a venue along with it. But when you spend all your money doing that, like this one girl said, it's quite out of control. Overall, though, I look at it and I say, hey, what do these guys do with their time? Primarily, they go to the bars. That, I think, is a serious cultural problem. Secondly, none of them are married. Again, I point to a cultural problem. We've taught people to wait forever to get married. But I also don't see any children in the mix. But, Kurt, in their defense a little bit, it's very hard to support a family on $50,000. Just imagine if they had kids in the mix. It would be very difficult for them. Now, I'm not saying it's not doable. You can take your drink money and raise kids. That's what I do. I don't have a drink budget. I do have a raise kids budget, though. Anyway, I bring this up, though, because, you know, in all fairness, with the belligerent inflation and the cost of reality today, it is very tough for folks to get married and have children. Kurt?
Well, I think it's only tough if you don't embrace the God way of doing things, Sam.
Amen. And, it's culturally tough, though, that, because, you know, most people aren't raised to know this anymore, sadly.
Yeah. Well, that's where, at least in my opinion, if you get right with God and you spend, instead of that bar time, you spend a little more church time, you spend a little more, you know, friends, neighbors, that kind of stuff, you'll get some real good grounding, if you will. There's just I was reading about one little bit of counsel from a previous conference where a leader of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints said this. He said the best ways for us to to live the true and pure simple teachings of Christ, thou shalt love the Lord thy God, and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself.
Hold on, we got a quick pause. When we get back, I want you to repeat that and finish the quote. I just don't want to lose this. It's vitally important, and it's, in my opinion, the solutions. Hang tight.
Yeah.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
We'll USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The Trump administration making it official. It's revoking California's authority to set vehicle emission standards that are different from the federal government's. 13 other states and the District of Columbia have followed suit with what they call the California waiver. But now Department of Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao has announced what's being called the One National Program.
No state has the authority to opt out of the nation's rules, and no state has the right to impose its policies on everybody else.
California and several other states are vowing to fight the revocation in the courts. Over 8 inches of rain falling in the Houston area since Tropical Depression Imelda made landfall on Tuesday. There have been hundreds of water rescues in just the past 24 hours. And this is USA Radio News.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
First-time claims for jobless benefits are up, but not as much as analysts were expecting. The Labor Department reporting 208,000 Americans filed initial claims last week, 2,000 more than the week before, but 5,000 fewer than the experts had predicted. The Federal Reserve ends a two-day policy meeting by cutting a key interest rate. The president's been calling for it to do so, but despite the announcement of the cut, the president's still not pleased. Here's more from correspondent Wendy King.
It's the second cut this year, but a deeply divided Fed is not signaling if there'll be more. Chairman Jay Powell says it could happen if the economy needs help.
We'll act as appropriate to help ensure that the expansion remains on track.
Investors appear disappointed at the uncertainty about more cuts, and President Trump made his displeasure clear, tweeting, "Powell and the Fed failed again."
Trade talks with Chinese are resuming today in Washington, D.C., and this is USA Radio News.
All right, we're talking about an average entry salary in the United States of over $50,000. And people are struggling to live on it, but we're talking about their life's choices and what we prize. Okay, listen to this. What do you prize? What matters to you? Where do you spend your time, your talents, your money, your efforts? And that, biblically speaking, is where your heart will be also. Now, I'm not downing these graduates, but most of us, sadly, have been growing up in homes that aren't religious-based, aren't grounded, aren't family-oriented. They're just pursue whatever you want. And we're leaving the, in my opinion, underpinnings of what made America great. And the answer is to return to those underpinnings. And Kurt highlighted a quote. I wanted Kurt to repeat it because I didn't want it to get lost in the break there. Let's just rewind for a second and start over on this quote. I want it to be uninterrupted, Kurt. Go ahead, sir.
Well, you have the Savior's two great commandments. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. In this talk that I was referencing, he goes on to say, obedience to these two commandments provides a way to experience more peace and joy. And that's what people are really looking for, Sam. I mean, that's when they're looking for fun, joy. And if they look in the right place, that's where they find it. He goes on, he says, when we love and serve the Lord and love and serve our neighbors, we will naturally feel more happiness that comes to us in no better way. We'll find peace, joy, and happiness in our life when serving the Lord and our neighbors. He says, can you see that learning and teaching The gospel in our families is an important way to find joy and happiness in our lives. And then he spoke about one of the commandments. He says the Sabbath, the Savior said, talking about the Sabbath, "For verily this is a day appointed unto you to rest from your labors." The Wall Street Journal didn't ask him about this, you know. "And to pay thy devotions unto the Most High." He added that thy joy may be full. That's joy, you know, that's pretty fun stuff. "Through rejoicing and prayer, ye should do these things with thanksgiving, with cheerful hearts and countenances, and with a glad heart and a cheerful countenance." You know, and then he says, that sounds to me like Sabbath day observance would bring a smile to your face. And then the final little phrase from his talk that I thought was pretty good, he says, "Let's not complicate things. Keep it simple. It's in that simplicity that you'll find the peace, joy, and happiness I've been talking about." So, peace, joy, and happiness. I was just thinking about, you know, these this story, we're talking about all the drinks and the parties and the going out to dinner and all that kind of stuff. And I was thinking about how lately it seems like we're overwhelmed with all these different foods out of the garden and the different things they're growing, you know, tomatoes, peaches, pears, plums, you got watermelon, all these different things, you know, that are being grown around us that seem to just almost be poured on us. And yet, I guess people that don't enjoy those, you know, they're hunting for, I guess you could say, love in all the wrong places, Sam.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, that one guy did go hunting to try to decrease his costs and things like that. And I do agree with growing gardens, and I think a lot of that stuff is easy. Part of the problem is if you've never been raised and taught that way, Kurt, then it's really kind of hard to do. A lot of times when people live in an apartment and stuff like that, it's more difficult to do. Now, creativity can get it done, and experience is kind of the mother of this a little bit, where, you know, you can grow a garden on a little patio, or you can grow a garden even in a windowsill. It might be small, but you can sprout things, and you can grow little things, or you can work on a way to grow a garden with somebody else. You know, you can get with maybe a neighbor in your church that has a home, and you can say, "Hey, if you take a little bit of your yard and maybe we can put a garden in, and I'll help you with it, and we can split the produce and stuff like that." There's a lot of ways to go about it, but again, a lot of these people just haven't been raised that way, and they don't really know better. Now, here's what I find interesting, though. We need to set up society where government, okay, and the world supports the family, Kurt, rather than tears down the family. And I think a lot of this relates to the heart of the problem here. For example, I don't know if you know, but two people single living together, their taxes are lower than if they get married. Did you know that, Kurt?
Really? I thought it was lower when they have the when they're married.
No, sir. It's higher when they're married. This has been a big battle. Now, if they have children, they get an earned income tax credit and children and stuff like that. But I'm just telling you, if you get married, your taxes go up. And I've had to go over this with my son because he's getting married. And he's like, "Why the heck is that?" You know, I'm just telling you, poor kid, right? But that's what's going on. It's called a marriage tax. We've debated this forever, and they've talked about getting rid of it. But, of course, we're just stuck on stupid. The point is, we need society and governments to reward and support the family, not give it a ton of special privilege necessarily, but to reward it, not penalize it. And so there's a lot of people that live together rather than getting married, and they're just like, "Hey, who needs a piece of paper?" Well, what they're really saying is, who wants to pay the government more money to get that done? Okay, and so this is kind of what
How much more is it?
I don't know. It depends on where you live.
I mean, you know.
Taxes are
different. Yeah, but I'm just
saying.
For every
bracket. Hold on, there's a ton of brackets.
Percentage-wise, yeah.
For taxes, and the percentages aren't the same. It's called a graduated income tax for a reason, right? So you
right.
can't just say, how much more is it to get married? That's like a question.
After you graduate, you pay it.
They want you to make it impossible to answer this question, Kurt. You better go to like a professional, my friend. Okay,
that's
so
right.
Your question's that's a fair one, but I don't know how to answer it. Depends on your income bracket. It depends on when you get married. It depends on, you know, what state you live in. It depends on a lot of things. But isn't there a marriage tax credit? I'm telling you, we've debated this thing over and over and over. We've covered news stories on it. Just type into Google married tax credit, right? I'm sorry, married tax. Take off the word credit. They say now seven tax advantages of getting married. They tell you that. Should you and your spouse file taxes jointly or separately? Marriage penalties and bonuses. See, there you go. And how many ways that marriage affects your taxes? H&R Block's marriage calculator. Tax benefits for married couples. Five's tax advantages. So there might be some benefits, but I'm telling you, single versus married, how to file smart. So it's a very complicated question. And my point is, it shouldn't be a debate. Okay, it shouldn't be that, man, I don't know if I want to get married, it's too expensive, and things like that. I believe marriage is one of the great anchors to a stable society. And I believe that children welcomed into those marriages brings a generational anchor to a stable society. And then teaching those children about God, family, and country is vital to societal stability and success. And that's why we talk so much about this story. I know some would say you've just spent way too much time on this story, Sam. I don't think so. Because what's interesting, Kurt, is that story doesn't provide a single solution, doesn't provide a single direction to make things better. They just, quote, do the who, what, and when, who, what, when, where, why of the story. But there's no direction. There's no solution. There's no conclusion that has, in my opinion, societal value to the article that the Wall Street Journal wrote. Is there? I mean, do they have a single solution in the article, Kurt?
None that I could see, Sam. I was looking to find out. It says, why do you pay more taxes when married? This is on Google. It says, married couples have the option to file jointly or separately on their federal income tax returns. In the vast majority of cases, it's best for married couples to file jointly, but there may be a few instances when it's better to submit separate returns. So that's why I was thinking it was always better to, I thought the numbers were better as a married couple than...
Well, type in marriage penalty.
Mm-hmm. I did, and I was reading through those. It says, a couple pays a marriage penalty if the partners pay more income tax as a married couple than they would pay as unmarried individuals. It compares the taxes a married couple would pay filing a joint return with what they would pay if they were not married and each filed as a single or head of household. So I think it, I guess you could say it all depends on those numbers.
Okay, so for example, they give an example here. They say sometimes you get a marriage bonus, sometimes you get a marriage penalty. For example, in 2018, a couple with one child where both partners make $25,000 each that pay $3,000 less taxes than they would if they weren't married. So again, it's a mixed bag. I don't deny that, but I'm telling you, there is a marriage penalty out there, and it can cost you more in taxes to get married. And I'm saying that stuff should not exist is my whole point. And that is insanity.
Well, and that goes to our previous discussions about, what taxes we ought to have, with the tariffs and some type of sales or an apportionment tax. There's pretty simple, basic constitutional taxes that would make it so that...
And would not penalize people for doing what's good and right and honorable and stuff. Anyway, I bring that up because the article has no solutions in it. And we've been talking about the solutions for quite a while now. This is the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win. They lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-5000. 2000.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that will preserve the vanishing resource of the American cowboy. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery that celebrates our history, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. You can order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I don't even know who Andrew Gillum is. Do you know, Kurt? Who is this guy?
Yeah, they call him the failed Florida gubernatorial candidate, guy that was running this last time there in Florida, and he got beat
Kurt,
by.
Let me just stop you for a second. I don't like, even if somebody loses an election, and this guy's probably not even on my side of the discussion, right? So I'm not defending anybody's side. I don't know if he's Republican or Democrat. I don't know who this guy is, okay? Now, I slightly remember what you're talking about a little bit, but I don't know much about him. He's probably a Democrat or whatever, and I don't know if he's black or white. I don't know anything about him, okay? But here's what I want to say. Why are we referring to him as a failed this and a failed that? I don't like us referring to people that way. I just don't see
well,
there's any value.
Well, it's a Breitbart piece, and Breitbart is going to basically promote their... You know, group,
I understand, but I don't like that. I don't care which side it is. I don't like that.
Yeah, it's just not nice. I don't think Aaron Klein writes this piece.
I just don't see the value either, though, Kurt. What's the value?
Yeah, well, you could just say, gubernatorial candidate, or in other words, the guy that
former
ran
gubernatorial
last
candidate.
Time. Yeah.
Or why even bring up that he's a gubernatorial candidate necessarily?
Well, because that's the reason they're covering him. He's joined the board of advisors of what's called the Collective. It's a little known but increasingly influential progressive political organization that says it's seeking to build a, quote, black political power, end quote, movement, while its co-founder complained that there are too many white men holding public office. You've got billionaire activist George Soros. He's a direct financial contributor to the Collective. Clear majority of the Collective's large donations come from a single entity. That's the 501c4 arm of the Collective, and it's such does not need to legally disclose the sources of its own funding. Gillum's association with the group is notable, given the Florida politician's warning last February about the influence of dark money in his own race for governor, referring to entities that obscure their donations. The Collective's co-founder, Quentin James, did not return Breitbart News' phone and email requests, seeking comment. By the way, Gillum's a CNN commentator. He penned a fundraising email for the Collective earlier this week, announcing his decision to join the group's advisory board. You know, I guess the old phrase, if you can't beat them, join them. But that just shows you a little bit more about how politics works. He's the one that lost to the Republican Ron DeSantis down there.
Okay, it's a big loss and stuff like that, and I don't have a problem with saying the unsuccessful bid or, you know, former whatever. I get it, but I just don't like to use the term failed. You know, let's say I make 25 businesses in my life and I fail on 24 of them, but I'm a multi-million dollar success on them. You know, you're just going to say failed businessman all the time? What about the light bulb and who makes that? So I guess what I'm saying is failure is part of success, Kurt. And I don't want to down anybody for a great effort, whether I agree or disagree with them on the details. I don't want to just attack people that way, right? I mean, somebody could say, hey, if my goal is to be a Rush Limbaugh, I'm a failed talk show host. But I've been at it 25-plus years. We haven't made $1 million, but we've covered our expenses, and we've really made a difference in the media, I believe. Is that a failed, you know? So anyway, we need to be very careful with that is my whole point, and I think we need to start with civility. And so that's why I bring that up. Nevertheless, though, I don't really like this guy joining this group to promote blacks over whites. Sounds kind of racist. And I really don't like the dark money group after criticizing the practice and, you know, just weird stuff there. Right?
Yep. Good point.
All right. Number of abortions hits lowest since 1973, Kurt. I guess the rate in 2017 was half what it was back in 1990, according to the Guttmacher Institute. Now, the Guttmacher Institute's a pro-abortion group. They're the only one that actually counts abortions in the United States. Now, I don't believe they count all the off-the-radar abortions, but they count a lot of the abortions, and they're saying that less death administered by abortion is happening in America, and I say that's potentially good news, Kurt.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, imagine that a little bit more. Taxpayers are born and they can grow up and pay, you know, and they can provide things. There might be even some that come up with a cure for, I don't know, the Federal Reserve or cancer or something like that, Sam.
Anyway, I hope it means less men and women are involved in illicit sexual behavior as well, Kurt.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope we have more life and less death and more appropriate behavior and more waiting, less rapes. You know, everything to do with the proper understanding of and behavior relating to God's sacred law of procreation and the relationship reserved only for one man and one woman. Anyway, I just pray that we can move towards that. And I celebrate this story and pray that it's true and pray that we can move the needle even further in our society. I guess after a third man OD'd, Kurt, in his home, gay Democratic donor is charged. His name is Ed Buck, I guess, and I guess he accused of running a, quote, drug den out of his house in Hollywood. I guess he has a West Hollywood apartment there. And it's a big old scandal and everything else. The family, I guess, sued and said, hey, this guy loves bringing people to the edge of death for a weird sexual fetish. And it goes on and on and on. But again, you wonder in Ed's life, first off, he's gay. Secondly, he is involved in drugs and death and the culture of death and drugs and perverted sex and everything else. You wonder, and you got to dig into this guy's life, but is he on drugs and medication? So the legal drugs or just the illegal kind or both? Is he stable? Was he raised in a home where God was at the center of that home, where family was prized, where a healthy relationship between men and women was... what do you want to say, the role model or whatever? I just got to question all that kind of stuff and wonder. And you could easily just say Ed's a pervert, Ed's a bad, evil guy. And he may be. But all I'm telling you is, you know, where was that guy raised? And a lot of this mental illness and a lot of these poor choices people make are because they never had the right guidance and the right protections from the start. So I'm not attacking this guy and I'm not defending him. What he's done is wrong. If he's really involved in a drug den, or whatever you want to call it, and all these people are ODing in his home, hey, that's a problem for sure. But I guess I'm just saying we need to look at, instead of just the behavior and the cause, we need to go back to the root a little bit and look at it. And I think it relates directly to the whole conversation we've been having about money and society and what do you prize? What is your heart centered on? And I think it goes back to that same principle we've been talking about and the solutions that you highlighted, Kurt, in those quotes. I think is really not only the answer, the anecdote, it's the solution to the problems we face, Kurt. Any comments on that one?
I don't think there's anything else to add on that.
Yeah, a lot of people are just going to attack Ed and say how evil and bad he is. But what we do is condemn him because he got caught. But we promote that behavior at every turn, right? Sadly true. All right, U.S. Navy, Kurt, they say confirms UFO videos. But the Navy doesn't like saying UFOs. And so they say that the Navy has been candid and open about this, but I completely disagree. Now that they've called a halt to the con game, And it's so on the table, the Navy might be more transparent, Kurt, but they've been covering this up forever, mocking those who said they're unidentified flying objects forever, acting like we're conspiracy nuts when they've had the truth the whole time and they've known it's been true the whole time. And this is the biggest problem I have with it. They say they don't like the word UFO. It makes people concerned in the skies. It does this. It does that. It should have never been released in the first place. But here's my point. Is it better to just be candid about what's really happening or better to keep things from the American people? And when they keep things from the American people and cover it up and mock those of us who said these things were real. Okay, I don't know about, you know, aliens and, you know, that kind of stuff. All I know is this. An unidentified object is just something that's weird in the sky that we see. We don't know what it is. It might be government experiments. It might be something secret, you know, classified information. It might be the military. It might be really a force out there. It might be somebody else on the planet we haven't discovered yet. I mean, I don't know where they come from. But my problem is the government covers it up forever. Then they release and admit it. They trashed our credibility for literally decades. And now they're admitting we were right once again. And now they're saying, well, the government's been really candid about this, Kurt. That's a lie. They haven't been candid about this. Okay. And so they've claimed that you and I are nuts for saying I believe UFOs are real. Now, that doesn't mean that we go with the conspiracy of what they may be. I'm not saying it's an alien that's got smooth skin, that's a gazillion times smarter than us. I mean, I don't know any of those things. But I am saying unidentified flying objects have been identified, and that's beyond debate. And they mock us and say we're conspiracy nuts. But now the truth comes out, Kurt.
Well, yeah, and you don't really know what else to add except... You know, I mean,
it's, maybe you should add that the government should owe me a bunch of money for peddling fake news against the fact that they knew the truth and they peddled fake news for decades and they've literally besmirched my character along the way.
Yep. And the Navy spokesman says that sightings of these unidentified aerial phenomena occur frequently. So, you know, these people are, you know, called crazy because they see stuff or say they do. You know, maybe they're not. So crazy, huh, Sam?
But what do you think about the government knowing that it's true, literally covering it up and lying about it for literally decades, mocking and besmirching my character as a news guy when I tell you the who, what, when, where, why, and say there is some reality to this, whether the government admits it or not. I don't know what they are. I'm not saying I know what the flying objects are, but they exist. And then they literally trash my character as a, you're one of those conspiracy theorists, aren't you? You probably are a birther. You probably are a truther. You probably are a UFOer. You were okay, and they knew the whole time that I was telling the truth, and they were involved in fake news cover-up, Kurt. And at some point, I'm not really trying to get money from the government as much as I'm trying to make a point. You know what? They need to literally triple down and apologize, and I mean, they owe us something for trashing our characters and our credibility for so long when they knew the truth all along. That's the point. They knew the truth all along, Kurt. It's not like they just discovered this now. They knew the truth and lied and covered it up and peddled fake news and mocked me. And used it as a way to discredit me. Just like when I tell you that the government distributes guns to criminals. And then they say, you're crazy, Sam, that isn't happening. Oh, yeah, it's guns and drugs to criminals. And then Operation Fast and Furious comes out and proves me right again. And I've been saying it, and they said, you're nuts, it isn't true. Okay, same thing with 9/11. I said Building 7 didn't come down the way the government said. Now you've got multiple people doubling down and agreeing with that. What, 18 years later? So how much of it's conspiracy theory versus fact, and how much does the government know but cover it up, peddle fake news, and literally attack our characters over these things, Kurt? And when are we going to say, does the government have any credibility left, Kurt?
Good question, Sam.
And I don't know the answer, and I'm not trying to get a check from the government. That's not my point. My point is, what can they do? If the government really wants to make it right and admit the truth and repent, what can they do to make it right to guys like me that have been on the radio 25 years and they've literally attacked my character the whole time on issue after issue after issue? Even on the last hour, we talked about this futures trading on gold and silver. I told them this was happening. You know, they're like, oh, I guess it is. Well, what about, you know, they were painting me a nut for so long. I'm not looking for them to pay me money, but I am looking for, you know what? Who's telling the truth and who's got the news the networks refuse to use versus who's got the fake news, huh? And your government, sadly, many times right at the heart of the fake news, peddling it themselves, even though they know all the while they're peddling fake news and lying to the American people. Wow. LibertyRoundtable.com. Donate today. Every penny will help us take center stage in the media. We declare this nation shall endure. For Sam and Kurt, God save the Republic of the United States of America.